We'll get to today's podcast in just a moment. It's made possible each day by KPP Financial, and we want you to know about our newest investment program. It's called Disciplined Equity. KPP has developed a strategy that filters through thousands of stocks based on business quality, chart strength, and underlying value. This strategy offers consistent exposure to the equity markets by focusing on only high-quality companies listed on U.S. exchanges. To find out more about this program, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Investments tab. And now, today's InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Wednesday edition, January 20th of InvestTalk. I appreciate it being and everybody listening in. And today we have with us today, Justin Klein. How are you doing, Justin?
Doing good. Am I a special guest now?
Well, I almost say it's special, guys. Yeah. I almost said that because it's rare that we do the show together.
Well, we both got busy lives.
Yeah.
Busy thing, helping a lot of people.
Yeah.
Takes a lot of time.
Okay, so everybody try to stay calm. We saw a big movement in the market today, but stay calm. Put a cold compress on your forehead and try to relax. And make sure you check in with your 401k. Take a look at your portfolios. Don't ignore them, but don't react in fear. Don't.
That's the biggest problem. Most people react in fear. They see the market down, was it 550 points at some point today?
Yeah.
And yeah. After a very large down stroke to start the year. And, you know, that started getting, I think, everybody into a panic frenzy. And usually that is the seeds for us, at least a short-term bottom.
Yeah, we might be there. And no one really knows. We won't know until you look back and say, yep, that was it.
Yeah.
But, when you get... And, you know, you could argue, and Justin and I were discussing whether this was an exhaustive sell-off or just, more sell-off to come. We don't know for sure, but it certainly seems like it's getting awful close. Okay, so don't panic. It's not time to panic. And, of course, the InvestTalk here, our mission is to help you provide information to help you make better choices in your money life, your financial life. And today, again, everyone is fixed on the market. They're asking, are we in a bear market now? If so, what does that mean? What is a bear market? Anybody know, have a guess of that? A bear market is one in which the prices of securities are falling and widespread pessimism causes the negative sentiment to just roll on. Okay? People expect more losses, so they get them. The selling feeds on itself. Pessimism grows.
And a lot of the times has to do with margin, right, in the system. There's a lot of borrowed money out there trying to leverage themselves into equities. And when the tide's in there going their way, they make a lot of money. But when the tide turns, pain increases quickly. They have to sell or force sellers, and that means lower and lower prices in the market.
So what's the difference between a bear market and a correction? A bear market and a correction. Now, usually a bear market shouldn't be confused. Don't confuse it with a correction. And a correction is a short-term trend, usually lasting a couple months.
Yeah, and usually around 10%. And 10% is pretty normal for a bull market. And it's been a while since we had a correction. Now we have had one officially. And the question is this does the correction turn into a bear market, or does the bull market resume itself? And
usually a bear market is a 20% or less in the major index, 20% or more fall in the major indexes, S&P 500, the Dow, those indexes.
And they're usually relatively quick. They don't last, ten years or anything.
No. They also are short in duration most of the time.
Usually from 9 months to maybe 2 years is probably the longest a bear market goes for.
Now, corrections are often a great place for value investors to step in. Bear markets are not. You don't know where that bottom is in a bear market. It just continues to fall. You think it's done and it's not. So you got to be really, really careful. Are we in a bear market? No, we've had it's a correction. Mm-hmm. It went right down to the August lows, and it looks like it wants to bounce off those August lows.
But will the downturn resume? And I would argue we are. I think we go through emotional cycles throughout the history of the market. And I think we are in the denial phase right now.
So, are we in a correction or a bear market? What are we? And you know what? Justin and I can't tell you yet.
I can tell you what we think. Yeah. I think we're in a bear market. Yeah. But
but we don't know. Think we know.
Nobody knows 100% until hindsight. You know.
Yeah, we'll know a year from now. We'll look back. Hey, there you go. There's the bear market.
Yeah, same with recession too. You know, I remember back in our recession. Last recession started in late 2007.
Yep.
And the market started to go down, but it wasn't really down a lot until, you know, late 2008. But in hindsight, they said, well, that was the start of the bear market. That was the start of the recession. And, you know, maybe we're in a recession now. It'd be, it's possible.
We have to only look in hindsight. Yeah. We'll get the fourth quarter GDP at the end of the month, end of this month in January to see. Then we'll get and I think it's going to be sub 2%, below 2. Mm-hmm. It might be below 1.5.
Yeah. But you also have to remember, too, is the market always bottoms in a recession.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's why we say you always look forward, not backwards. So where is the market going? Where is the economy going? If we are going to, if we're in a recession or we're going to be in a recession soon, then we are in a bear market.
So how do you tell the difference, everybody? It's pretty hard. Don't think that there's a crystal ball and everybody knows. It's just hard. So what do you want to talk about today? 888-99-CHARTER is our number, our anytime number. I hope you feel that you can be part of the discussion. So give us a call. Let's go to Jeff in Marietta. How you doing, Jeff?
Hey, good, Steve. Happy New Year.
Thank you.
I've talked to you guys since a couple calls last year.
Good.
So I'm pretty much been out of the market. You know, I've got a 401k that I converted to an IRA and another 401k that's just in a bond mutual fund. But my other one with Fidelity is pretty much all cash. But I'm just wondering, as far as a preferred stock selection would go, because, you know, it's not quite as volatile and you're guaranteed the coupon rate. What do you think? Like, there's a, there's a preferred index. I think you guys even referenced it one time on your information.
I did a few weeks ago.
I'm thinking about if I was to take and just buy a preferred, would I have less downside risk? And you guaranteed the coupon rate, and you know some of them pay 5-6%. That's kind of like my question.
Well, first of all, Jeff, congratulations on being in cash. I mean, you know, that's hard. That was hard to do. I mean, you know, everybody, you know, Chuck and I have been recommending increasing cash positions, but not everybody does it, you know.
And you're looking at preferred shares and you're looking in preferred share. Yes, there is less downside risk than equities because preferred shares are, there's a certain capital structure that companies have. And bonds are at the top of the capital structure. And the capital structure only really matters when a company goes bankrupt or is in financial trouble. And so the bondholders have first right to that money if it goes bankrupt. Well, who's second, really, after the bonds are the preferred shareholders. And then equity shareholders are last.
The common shareholders.
The common stock, which that's what most people purchase when you're buying stocks, are common stock. And so preferreds are kind of in between. So it's kind of a hybrid between a bond and a stock.
So you do get that coupon, which is really good, and there is, as Justin just mentioned, limited downside risk. So it is something, but you do it with, you make sure you do it with companies that are very solid.
Yeah. The biggest issue with most preferred shares is they're tied to banks. The vast majority of preferreds that are out there that have been issued are issued by banks. And that's why if you buy like PFF is an ETF for preferred shares. The majority of the stocks or the preferreds in there are from banks like HSBC, Barclays, Citigroup, Wells Fargo, RBS, Countrywide, Deutsche Bank, et cetera. Those are kind of some of the top holdings in that fund. So you kind of leverage yourself if you're buying that index to the financial industry. And if we have, you know, 2008 all over again, if there are, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but if that type of thing manifests itself, then, you know, you could have more substantial downside.
So rate. I would prefer that you buy the preferreds individually for individual companies that you like.
Yeah.
You know,
So I'm looking at Public Storage, which is, you know, you know, well-known name in our area, and it's almost 6%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not a bad way to go.
Trying to remember the symbol.
PSA.
PSA.
Yeah, so That's a good way to go, I would say.
Yeah, I would say so too.
Yeah,
I would do that.
Yeah.
So you think if you kind of maybe went, if you went all in, you know, whatever that amount might be, and because I think it comes, one of them comes due maybe in a year, they can call it in a year.
Right.
You think you'd be safe going throughout the whole year to get us into, 20.
Public storage isn't going bankrupt in the next year. But, you know, make sure it's not 100% of your portfolio either, because you never know what that could be. But, you know, no more than 5-7% of your portfolio.
You don't want Thanks for the call. Appreciate you, John. We'll come through this volatility, everybody, but will your portfolio still be in line with your personal goals or your risk tolerance? That's really what it is all about.
Or your investing timeline as well.
Yeah, your goals, your risk tolerance, and how long you want to be in this market. Okay, timeline. These are the questions we can help answer. Each month, I set aside a few hours to talk with listeners personally. These are one-on-one meetings focusing on your retirement accounts. And I can make some recommendations, give you some options to reserve your time. Just go to investtalk.com and click on schedule a meeting. Or you can call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts. 888-992-4278. We're going to go talk to George in San Jose. He wants to talk about Chevron. How are you doing, George?
Hi, Steve and Austin. Thank you so much for taking my call. I've been watching Chevron, Exxon for a while, you know, try to at least sell some puts, like, for example, January 20, 2017, get a position. But the confusion that is existing is, you know, right now you look at Chevron, for example, they say that PE is 17, 18, but that PE is not real because they're not going to make that much money from the oil part of it.
Correct.
And the refinery also, their margin is getting squeezed. So what is the price that would be worth it that we consider, for example, Chevron? I listen from radio.
Okay. Chevron, symbol CVX, everybody knows who it is, big integrated oil company. So what's a good price for it to buy? Again, it's attached to oil prices, and oil keeps coming down. It's still putting downward pressure on the big majors. But notice that if you look at the majors, they're not nearly as low as they were in August.
No, they're making a higher low, which is kind of odd because oil's making a
lower
new lows. Is that like 25-year lows?
Yeah. So that to me means it's kind of, I think we're getting close to the bottom or we're near the bottom. And I've been saying that when oil is around $30 a barrel.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I was wrong on that. So don't anybody say that I never say I'm wrong. I said I think it's going to hold about $30. And today, what, 27
or so? 27 change.
So, yeah, I'm still thinking that it's getting awful close to where it's going to stop.
Yeah, and sure, it won't make as much as it did in 2014, it made $10 a share. It's supposed to make $3.46 in 2015. We don't have the final quarter yet for 2015, so we're not sure. But, you know, we also don't think oil is going to stay down this low over the long term. It just can't. You can't. The cost to drill is just much higher. And eventually, once a lot of the companies that are in financial trouble go bankrupt, then oil prices will start to rebound a little bit and Chevron will do all right. And so we own Chevron in our managed accounts, so
like it. And from a technical point of view, it looks like an exhaustive sell-off today with it coming off its lows strongly.
Yeah, and big volume.
So that tells me that it could be the end of the sell-off.
It's a good sign.
Yeah. 888-99-CHART is our number, everybody. This is Invest Talk. Big market moves can rattle the nerves. We know that. So let's talk about it. So y'all don't have to stay calm. We're here for you, Justin and I. Our direct number is 888-99-CHART.
Here's another benefit when you sign up for our InvestTalk Insider program, a brief list of real estate investment trusts, REITs, that should be on investors' radar if they're looking for exposure to this dividend-focused sector. You can sign up for this free InvestTalk Insider program on investtalk.com.
We're going to talk to Richard in Castro Valley. How are you doing, Richard?
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for the call.
Excellent. Love to see the comeback today. I sold VIX March options 20, 22, and 25. Was that
March?
You know, right when it was about 29 to 30.
You sold what? Calls, puts? What did you sell?
Sell calls. Yes.
Okay. And March.
Yeah, March.
Yeah, I think you March. Might. I think you might be okay. You know, I think we are close to a relief rally in the market, but that is a rally we do think is to sell. But these rallies usually they're not over in just a week or two.
Yeah, we're thinking four to six weeks.
Yeah, right? So you might be all right.
You might be all right with that, Richard.
Yeah.
Now everybody else, maybe you ought to explain what he's doing because you know.
He's selling calls, so he's trying to collect a premium and hoping that the price of the VIX, the volatility index, doesn't rise above the strike price on his calls. What is the strike price on those calls?
They weren't all bought at the same time, but right now, when it was around 20 to 29 to 30 today.
Okay, so you sold them, right? Not bought them.
Correct, sold.
Okay. Yeah, so what I would say is once we get a rally, if you see the S&P up to maybe 2,000 around there, then I would probably buy those call options back and make your premium if you're not close to, you know, they're not close to expiring.
Rich, thanks for the call.
Okay. Appreciate
the call. Thank you. Best time to invest in index funds. That's one of our main talking points today. Also, I want to talk about the low oil prices that are hurting other industries, and one particular company that I want to discuss, Brinker International, and why. Also, default risks in the energy. Another issue, we've talked about this before, but I want to talk about the credit spreads between energy and corporate bonds. It's at a level that's pretty significant. And something a little less heavy, how about how many workers do you think? What percentage of workers out there did not take a vacation last year? No vacation last year. How much would you think that would be, percent wise? 50%, 80%, 10%?
I'm going to guess 40%.
You can guess that.
That's my guess.
We're going to talk about it. 888-99-CHARTER is our number. The market was down today, 249 points on the Dow and 5 points on the NASDAQ and 22 points on the S&P 500. But boy, that wasn't the whole story.
Yeah, it was a much bloodier day in the morning. You had the Dow off more than double what it ended. It was down for about 550 points or so and closed down only 249 points. So much better day, reversal, a lot of volume. We breached the lows that we had in August for, you know, an hour or so. And then we reversed, and you know, now we have a lower low. If it, even it does reverse, you still have a lower low and lower high, so it's not a good technical position. But for short term, we do think that there will be a relief rally. It's just a matter of how far it will go.
There, I can almost guarantee a relief rally. The problem we have, and the problem everybody has, is trying to look in that crystal ball and say, oh, we're going to have the relief rally now. We don't know that. It just... You know, odds are favorable, mean that this looks like the point where it should start to rally a little bit. Mm-hmm. But we don't know that. I don't want to give anybody the impression that we're some, you know.
Wait, you didn't bring your crystal ball today?
Yeah, and I always want to warn people when experts talk, they're just giving you their best opinion.
Yeah. Educated opinion.
Yes.
Just like what we are.
An experienced opinion, you know. That kind of thing. Yeah, we've been through this many, many times. We know what it tends to do, and that's what we're discussing. So anyways, when's the best time to buy an index fund? Okay, that's something we want to discuss and maybe get into a little bit more. The best time to buy an index fund, of course, is when the market is in a strong bull market phase.
Yeah.
You know, so you want to ride the bull market phase. And why is that? Because professionals like us, it's very difficult to beat the indexes because our abilities don't come through until there's turmoil. Mm-hmm.
It's through a cycle. It's easy to beat them, or to say, oh, indexing works when the market's good.
Yeah.
Everybody. When the market isn't good, like right now, there sure is a lot of people that got the advice, oh, I just indexed, put in the S&P 500, and I'm good. Well, guess what? That isn't necessarily right for everybody because some people are more emotional. Some people can't handle that type of volatility.
And some people don't have the time to make it up if we go into a bear market.
Exactly.
There's all kinds of reasons.
Yeah. So don't fall in love with index funds. They're fine. And if you look at indexing, it really only works good for large cap stocks. Doesn't work in bond funds. Doesn't work nearly as well in small cap stocks. Doesn't work nearly as well in foreign equities. So it really only works for large cap stocks like the S&P 500.
You're listening to Invest Talk. Coming up in the next half hour, does my employer's matching contribution count towards the maximum I can contribute to my 401k plan? 888-99-CHART is our new time number, and you can call right now.
Got a question for Steve or Justin?
I'm wondering what out there is going to work better over the next 20 years than buy and hold.
You're the best person to ask it at 888-99-CHART.
Coming up on the next Invest Talk, does your fund hold more risk than you know? 9 things to know about investing in a mutual fund. That's one of our talking points on the next Invest Talk. But of course, your questions come first. And if you call between 4 and 5 p.m. Pacific time, you can talk directly with Steve and Justin at 888-99-CHART. And thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. InvestTalk is made possible each day by KPP Financial. This is InvestTalk for Wednesday, January 20th. And remember, Steve meets with a limited number of InvestTalk listeners each month. He meets on Skype or by phone or at one of our California offices. To schedule your time, click on Schedule a Meeting on InvestTalk.com.
888-99-CHART. We're going to talk to William in San Jose. How you doing, William?
I'm doing great. Hey, Steve and Justin.
Thank you for calling.
So, I'm calling about GoPro. I heard your segment yesterday on the podcast about GoPro.
Mm-hmm.
So my situation is that I got into this stock last year at $39, and now it's down to $10. So I took my eye off of it and made a big mistake. So I'm wondering what would you do if you were in this scenario?
Okay, so we're already in it. We know we have a loss. The question is, do we cut our loss or do we wait for a bounce to see if we can get a bounce and sell it on that bounce? I don't think you should be a long-term holder, GoPro, and Justin and I both, I think, agree on that, there's too easy to copy. There's not a big moat. You know, big boys and foreigners can come in and kind of do the same thing they're doing, so what's so special? So, Justin, what do you think, looking at a chart? Do you think you should get out? I mean, we know the numbers, the fundamental numbers, and still, you know, it looks decent. It's not terrible.
Yeah, it's a lot cheaper than it was at $39 a share. You know, I do think this could rally into maybe the $20 level, but that's asking a lot for the name. It's certainly oversold, and I think it will get a bounce with the overall market. I could see there being buyout rumors or something like that because now it's only worth $1.5 billion. And, you know, maybe there's a company like an Apple or something or a Samsung that wants to take their brand and actually innovate with it instead of kind of what they've done, which is not much with it. Yeah. So, you know, there's certainly that possibility. You know,
I would sell it into any rally. Personally.
Yeah, any 20, 30% rally, I would just sell it and get out. I mean, I it could go lower too. I mean, this is a tough one. This is a good example of why you can't, you know, it's really tough to take your eye off the ball of especially IPOs, big tech companies that are, there's a lot of excitement over because they can turn very, very quickly, and that's what you saw with GoPro. So you know, anything, any little rally, I would sell it.
Just take it off, just leave it. William, appreciate the call. I'm sorry about that. That's a tough situation. Thank you for the call. GoPro, everybody, GPRO. We talked about it at length yesterday. Low oil prices are hurting other companies besides just oil companies. And one I noticed today was Brinker International. There was an article. Brinker International, who are they? They operate 1,600 Chili's and Maggiore restaurants in 32 countries.
What does that have to do with oil?
You wouldn't think it had nothing to do with oil. The problem is most of their recent growth in the recent years have been in the oil states.
So they're opening up restaurants in, I'm
Texas,
assuming, Texas,
Louisiana,
North Dakota,
Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, those stores look terrible. You know, so now, and they represent, I think he said about 14% of gross sales.
Wow.
In those regions. The oil states.
I'm assuming a lot of the 14% was already there before the oil real boom
happened.
Well,
they built up more and more stores as in recent years. And so now it's 14% of their gross sales, and that really has taken. So taken a hit because those oil companies are, you know, we have a bunch of bankruptcies. Besides real estate in that area, which I know is weakening in Texas because I have relatives there. And they're in the real estate appraisal business.
Ah.
So, there's restaurants are starting to hurt. So it spreads. When everybody talks about how good low oil prices are, well, in essence, yes, it is good for the consumer because you get low gas prices. But it also hurts in many other areas of our economy. Don't think it's always all good news. And the lower they go, the more pain it's going to have. And that alone could push us into a recession. It's possible. So don't think it's always good news because of low oil prices.
And Brinker doesn't look very good.
You know, oil prices has fallen 76% from the 2014 high.
That's the biggest. I think it's the biggest drop percentage-wise ever in such a short period of time.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's what I read too. So just be aware that there's other pain out there besides just the oil patch. Now you can think of us as a source of information, source of answers about real estate, about anything financial. Justin here is a licensed real estate agent. And we have a team that specializes in real estate and high-end real estate as well as the average real estate. So if you think you're going to downsize anytime soon, maybe you should give Justin a call. Maybe we can help you with that. You want to sell your properties and getting you into another one. You know, and it's very important how you stage the property and get the maximum amount you can from it. And that staging means you need to talk to somebody who knows what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. How much money can I get if I redo the kitchen? Should I redo the kitchen? No, yes, that kind of thing. Anyways, we have some ideas on that. If you want to talk to us, you can call our 24-hour listen line, leave a message, 888-99-CHART, or just contact Justin directly by going to investtalk.com.
How about some inside information? There's a whole collection of webinars like How the Pros Do It. Steve and Justin give you an inside look at the strategies and tools that the professionals use to grow and protect money. Become an InvestTalk Insider. Join up for free right now on InvestTalk.com.
Hey, Steve and Justin. This is John from Delaware. Just curious your guys' thoughts on ConocoPhillips, symbol COP. It seems to be getting beat up a little bit more than other oil companies, so I was curious your take on the outlook for ConocoPhillips and just in comparison to other oil plays like Exxon and whatnot. So I'll be listening for your answer on the air. Thanks. Bye.
Okay. COP is a symbol. ConocoPhillips engages in exploration and production of crude oil and natural gas in 27 countries. It is a $43 billion company, so it's pretty big. And, of course, like all the other majors, sales have fallen like a stone. Mm-hmm. And so the nice thing about ConocoPhillips is the dividend yield of 8.5%. Mm-hmm. That's pretty high.
And he was comparing it to Exxon and maybe Chevron.
The other majors.
And the reason that it's different is because those companies are more integrated. You know, they have refineries and chemical portions of their business, things that they make with the oil that they drill out of the ground. And so it would be more of a vertically, what they call vertically integrated business. So some parts of Exxon business actually improves with low oil prices.
Yeah.
Where ConocoPhillips, they're just a driller, explorer, and with lower oil prices, that directly hurts almost all their business.
Yeah, so they're going to be losing money, even though they're a huge $42 billion, they have great cash flow and all those wonderful things, but they're going to lose money per share versus Exxon Chevron. They're still going to make money per share.
Yep.
So there's issues there, and that's one of the reasons why maybe it's falling a little bit faster.
Yeah, so and their debt, I don't think, is a big issue. They are losing money, so, you know, can they pay the dividend? Sure, they're going to have to borrow money to pay that dividend. And they can do that for a relatively short period of time because of their balance sheet. Yeah, their huge cash flow, their balance sheet is still not that stretched. So they have some time to really weather this storm, and we think they will weather it. So it's certainly one of the higher risk names in the industry, but it's I think it's worth taking a shot at.
Time for Invest All Personal, the day-to-day money choices we make that can have a lasting impact. Does my employer's matching contribution count towards a maximum I can contribute to my 401k plan? So you have an employer who contributes, let's say, dollar for dollar. That would be rare, but it's possible. So your contributions to 401k plans can come from employee salary, deferral, and employer match dollars. According to the IRS, employees may defer up to $18,000 of their salary for 2015, and the employer may make matching contributions based on that amount, plus additional contributions for bonuses or other purposes. The amount the employer contributes is separate and above the employee's maximum. Therefore, it does not reduce the amount an employee may defer from his salary. The total amount the employer can contribute to 2015 is a lesser of the participant's total annual compensation, or $53,000.
So that $18,000 limit is basically what they're saying. The $18,000 limit is just for what you
employees.
Put in. Yeah, what you put into your 401k. And it's $6,000. If you're over 50, you can do a catch-up up to $24,000. But so the employer can put money to match and put money in on top of that, those numbers, but it can't exceed whatever you make that year, or $53,000.
And that's Invest All Personal, everybody. You can see a link to the information article, the informative article on this topic. It's at it's next to our talking point link on investtalk.com. Now let's get back to the phones. Give us a call at 888-99-CHART, and we're going to go to Gene in Houston. How are you doing, Gene?
Good. How are you?
Good. Good. You want to talk about 401k?
Yes.
Sure.
So we have a limit we can contribute to every year, which you just mentioned.
18,000.
And usually we pick about, let's say, 10% or 7% of our salary, which goes to your 401k, my 401k, every month.
Okay.
But Warren Buffett says that you got to be fearful when others are greedy and be greedy when others are fearful. So looking at the market, now people are fearful. So I think I should be greedy. So what I'm thinking is I should put a lot more. Instead of 10, I should put 15% now. And then when the market picks up, when people are not fearful, then I should take it down to 5%. And over the year, I'll still be below the maximum amount, but I'll buy more shares when the market is down and less when it's going up. So what do you think about that?
Okay. First of all, let's talk about Warren Buffett saying be fearful when everybody else is greedy, and greedy when everybody else is fearful. Notice he doesn't say how fearful or how greedy. We don't know where the extreme is, and that's really where that saying is very meaningful, at the extremes. So the question is how fearful is everybody right now? We think they're pretty fearful. That's why we expect a bounce.
Yeah, I think in the near term, yes, people are fearful. But the question is, what's maximum fear? I don't think we're at maximum fear yet.
No, I don't either.
I still think we're in the denial phase, and we'll see more fear down the line. But I don't hate what you're thinking. It's just difficult to know, you know, when that fear level is at a maximum and when that greed level is also at a maximum.
And if you got lots of time, Gene, if you have lots of time, 20 years, 30 years, to you can just continue to invest over time on your 401k, and you will be fine.
Yeah, and you're going to buy more naturally if you're dollar cost averaging, right, you have some sort of set allocation in your 401k, you're going to naturally buy more when the market does go down, because you're going to be putting the same amount in, but you're going to be buying more because obviously shares are cheaper and the market's cheaper. So naturally you'll be buying more as the market, when the market goes
down. So yes, Gene, your thinking is proper. But I don't want you to think that this is that maximum fear that we're dealing with today. This is not. I don't think it is, and I think, and Justin doesn't think it is. So
and don't think that you have it's not easy to target when there's that maximum greed either. You know, what if you think, oh, well, everyone's greedy? Well, people can get greedier and you might miss out on more upside. So
yeah. Remember when was it Greenspan said irrational exuberance for the stock market, and it was 2 years before 2000 when the market did finally peak.
Yeah, I think the NASDAQ more than doubled from that level.
Yeah, so he thought it was greedy then, and he was way too early. So it's very difficult. But good thinking, Gene. Appreciate the call. 888-99-CHARTER is our 24-hour listener line. Let's answer a question from that listener line calls.
Hey, this is Jack Carl from Cape Coral, Florida. I got a question for you about buying direct purchase directly from companies. Buying stock direct purchase. I was thinking about this, and some of the blue chip companies that pay good dividends, they have this drip plans built in with this. Do you see an advantage to buying good blue chip stocks like GE, IBM, et cetera, that pay dividends directly through the company? Is there any advantage to that? What's your thoughts on direct purchase of stocks, blue chip stocks, directly from companies? Thanks for the information. Enjoy the show.
Yes, there are advantages to it, but there are also disadvantages. So don't think that it's only one side or the other. And you got to be real careful because you still need your spread of risk. And that means you need to do a number of DRIP. DRIP means dividend reinvestment plans.
Yeah.
One of the advantages is you never have to pay a commission. And they keep reinvesting the dividend into more stocks. Mm-hmm. Grows over time.
Yeah, I like it, like you said, but I think most important is diversify and don't get fall in love, because I think 50 years ago, the S&P is vast majority of the companies that were in the S&P 50 years ago are out of business now or no longer alive. So, you know, that
be very selective.
And remember, especially in today's globalized world where, you know, ideas flow freely and innovation happens quicker than it used to, and companies that today look like they're great and they're doing very, very well can be innovated away and creative destruction can happen, which is, I know, one of your favorite words, Steve.
That's right.
As that can happen pretty quickly, and those companies can really be hurt. And so don't fall in love and overload your portfolio with one company.
We're down to our last segment, everybody, of the show, but there's still time for your question or comment. And a reminder, you can take our free risk analysis test. It only takes a couple minutes, and you'll have a better sense of your personal risk tolerance. It's there for free on investtalk.com. And remember, the score of about 80 is the risk of the S&P 500. So if you send us your portfolio, we'll put that in on the other side, and we can see if your personal risk tolerance matches up with what your portfolio is. I'm Steve Peasley with Justin Klein, and this is Invest Talk. Now, we've talked about the default risk of energy bonds, okay? Bonds issued over the years to produce all that extra oil we're getting out of the fracking companies. And we talked about 30 of those companies so far have gone out of business, and there's probably going to be another 100 plus go out of business this year. Therefore, the credit spread between normal junk bonds and energy junk bonds, when I say normal, I mean normal corporate junk bonds, is huge. Everybody's expecting a lot more damage in the bond market from the energy side of things. You don't want to know what's the last time we had this? In 2008. Late 2007, 2008. We still had this exact same spread. So I'm not saying that this is a precursor to problems, but I will tell you this. The bond market usually leads the stock market. It usually tries to to tell you that something's not right in equity prices. And we have been seeing this warning all last year, most of last year, and now into this year, we're still seeing this warning.
Yeah, we're about 2 years actually on from when the bond market just started to show some issues. You know, we had really tight credit spreads for a long time. And that means that most people weren't fearful about defaults. No. And really in mid to late 2014 is when the credit spread started to rise. And on the corporate bond market, that was down to about 1% was the credit spread, meaning, okay, what is the average yield that, you know, quality corporate bonds are yielding over treasuries? Okay. So if it's treasury yielding 2%, the average would be about 3%. Well, now that's about doubled, or about 1.91%. So the spreads have certainly widened out on the corporate bond side, high grade. And if you go to junk bonds, you know, you're talking about the lowest rated bonds that are out there in the marketplace. That spread was about 3.5%. You know, these are companies with a lot of debt on their balance sheet, and most credit rating agencies aren't so keen on the fact that they'll actually be able to repay. That was about 3.5%. That's very low. That was near historic lows, and now we're at 7.8%.
Meaning more fear coming in to the bondholders that. Yep. The bonds, some of these bonds are not going to be paying their bills. Mm-hmm. Okay, you're not going to get your money back. Mm-hmm. And we started too early ringing the warning bell on this, and mm-hmm. I'll admit that we did that. But it's better being too early than too late. Mm-hmm. So there's no guarantee that the stock market's going to crash or anything like that. We just know there's a lot of pressure.
And the corporate bond market needs to turn around for, I think, the equity market to turn around. In 2008, that high yield credit spread blew out to over 20%. Now it's at 7.8%. So, you know, there could be a lot more.
And that
more
was
to
an
go.
Extreme.
That was an extreme,
That extreme does exist, though, in energy debt.
Yeah, there are a lot of energy bonds that are trading at 20% spreads.
We have time for one more question before we're done for the day. 888-99-CHARS, how you reach us between programs, and here's the caller.
Hi, Steve and Justin. I was calling in with a question looking at the Vanguard Growth ETF. The symbol is VUG. Wanted to get your opinion and what you think the outlook is for the year, and if it would be a good time to buy and at what entry point. Thank you for your show.
Okay, VUG is the Vanguard Growth ETF, exchange-traded fund, seeking the performance correspondent to the U.S. Large Cap Growth Index.
So and growth has done very well over the past 2-3 years, right? And this is I think in the short term, this is actually a good buying point. You know,
right.
It's like most things, you know, if the market bottoms for the short term, I think it will. But I think long term, most of these names are overvalued, you know, like Amazon and Facebook and Google. And those are kind of the top holdings.
Yeah. So be very careful. It's a short term bottom, but, you know, we don't know about that. I'm Steve Peasley. Our time is up, everybody, just so you know. I'm Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, along with Justin Klein. We are a registered investment advisor firm, KPP Financial. And for everybody at KPP, thank you for listening today.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.